listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have singer, songwriter, artist extraordinaire, Mr. Sydney Riley. How are you, Sydney?
How are you, Nikki? What's going on, brother? How are
you, man? I'm chilling. I'm chilling like a villain, bro. What you been up to, dude?
You know, working, grinding, rise and grind. You know how it is.
That's the ascension of a star. That's how what it takes, man. Hustle and flow, bro. Hustle and flow. Hey,
have you done an album called Kalula DeVille yet? Because if you haven't, you need to.
I should.
I was looking at your name over here. I'm like, dude, how does this just occur to me now? But I'm like, look at that. I'm like, dude, Kalula DeVille. And it needs to be a dope, like nice, maybe like a slightly like goth sprinkled album on there, you know?
I like it. I like where you're heading with this.
Hey, whatever. You know,
I need the makeup. I need the goofy outfits. I'm ready.
The whole nine yards. Totally.
So let's just go right into it, dude.
Tell me,
what was the moment of Zen? Maybe it was a song your family played or you heard on TV or it was the first time you saw an artist. What was the moment of Zen that made you want to be an artist or involved in music?
Totally. You know, I have one specific moment that happened, which is funny how you talk about that I remember. So I lived in Saudi Arabia for a year when I was 10. And through just happenstance, I ended up getting the opportunity to like audition to sing on this little children's television show that called.
I saw that in your bio.
Yeah.
Was it like Kids Incorporated or what was it like? It was
more like Mickey Mouse Club.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. It was kind of like a Mickey Mouse Club. Yeah. But I when I got to the first like day of shooting, there was a girl that was singing. And everybody was like mesmerized while she was like performing. And I remember I was looking around at everybody just like, you know, taken aback by her. And I was like, holy crap. Like that's blank. You know, I'm not going to curse, but that's awesome. Like I want to do that. You know, I want that.
Right? Curse. Don't worry, you can curse.
Yeah. I was like, that's fucking awesome. You know, like, hell yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she was just, yeah. So it was just kind of like a new level of influence, right? A new level of like, how you can impact and affect somebody in a different way, you know? So, and I just saw how she just commanded the room and I was like, oh, I kind of like that.
Do you remember the song that she sang? It was like a musical theater piece?
It was something from The Little Mermaid.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's such good writing in all those animated series and all those movies. It's like, yeah, of course. That totally makes sense.
Totally. I mean? Yeah. And I mean, she had a beautiful voice. I still remember, still hear it, you know? But yeah, that was the moment.
Did you take like singing lessons? Did you sing in a chorus? Like, what was the first time you did it?
Yeah. No, the first, so I auditioned and ended up getting it. And the first song I sang on the air was John Denver's Country Roads.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, great song. Yeah.
That's absolutely awesome.
Yeah. So like that was my first kind of introduction. I didn't have any vocal, anything prior to that.
Wow.
I didn't really take
sang on TV for the first time.
Yeah, just like walked in and I feel nervous about it, whatever.
That's
why. There's not that many people, to be honest with you, and there's cameras, but like, you know, it's like, all right, like they're just pieces of machinery. It just didn't seem like it wasn't enough to be nervous. I would have been more nervous if there was a ton of kids or a ton of people, but there's only like maximum 10 people that were there during filming at all times. So
it's still crazy. Yeah. I mean, you must have been what, 10 or 11 years old? How
like
old
10,
you?
Yeah.
Wow, that's I remember singing that young, and even a situation like that I'd have to prepare. So like the fact that you didn't have lessons or anything, you're like, yeah, just give me the song, let me listen. Did you do it over and over and that's how you learned it?
Yeah, we practiced it and there was a guy that was playing it on guitar that that we rehearsed with, and yeah, just went in and did it. I didn't really think about it too much. It was just more like, let it be fun and not getting too much in my head about it. I think probably if I did, I would have been more nervous. You know?
What's funny is John Denver, when I was a kid, was a superstar to me because the record that was always playing in my house, especially during the holidays, was John Denver and the Muppets Christmas album. I had never known any of his music, but I knew him like from the Muppets, you know, a Christmas album. And like, you know, on that record, he looks like he's like best friends with all the Muppets. So I, as a kid, I was just like, this guy's my hero. Like, this guy's a real person and he's hanging out with the Muppets, dude.
How the hell did he get to hang out with them?
You know what's so funny? It's like, I always tell people, I'm like, no matter what I've accomplished in music, I feel like I haven't made it until I'm sitting with the Muppets.
Dude, we have to make this happen. We have to.
This has been my dream. It's just to like hang out with the Muppets and like making songs. And that's when I know, like, okay, I've arrived. That's the moment. Doesn't matter if it's an award. That's the moment where I'm like, okay, I've earned this accolade. So John Denver is a huge deal for me because he first was introduced to me by the Muppets. So you're already
That song is like, it's still special. It's always special to me. I love that song. And you know, I've been fortunate enough to drive and visit West Virginia and be there a few times, you know, to kind of see it firsthand. And I mean, there's some stunning parts of West Virginia that it's just like, you get taken aback with how gorgeous the, you know.
Yeah, it's like rolling hills.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, it's beautiful.
Like, yeah. I love that scene in Dumb and Dumber where it's like they think they're in Virginia and they're like driving through some other part and they're like, that John Denver was full of shit. Yeah,
I expected the Rocky Mountains to be a little rockier than this.
I love that scene. Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's cool because he definitely, you know, and I didn't really know it then, but he was definitely a hippie. He definitely wrote about how beautiful like the land around him is and was at the time, you know, so you know, he was definitely a very poignant songwriter. And it's crazy. What made you choose that song in particular? Was it just somebody said, you need to sing this song?
No, somebody said, this is what we're singing.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
I didn't choose it. Yeah, I didn't even hear John Denver before.
What other songs did you sing as a kid for the TV show?
A lot of them were like The Lion King, songs from The Lion King, and like some songs from like musicals a lot of times. That actually was very randomly. That was the only song that was like not from some type of a musical that we ended up performing.
And did you have to do like sketches with it or like kind of like dances or anything?
Like, yeah, not dances so much. But like different sketches and things like this and like scenario stuff and a little like interview things. And yeah, it was kind of a combination between sketches, interviews, and just live performances of songs.
So how many days a week were you filming?
Like 2 days a week.
All day.
Yeah. Sometimes it was all night.
Wow.
Yeah. Cause if like, if it was during like Eid, which is like, they're like, sorry, near, if it was Ramadan, right. For example, right. Like the hours were different. Right. So like people weren't eating during the day. So right. A lot of times it was, you know, there was filming would hours would change to kind of accommodate. But yeah. So it was just, sometimes I'm a, you know, a 10-year-old being there at the studio all night and then not sleeping.
Tell me what that transition was like. You're a 9-year-old kid and then you moved to Saudi Arabia. Like coming from the U.S., that had to be a big kind of like, you know, changeover for you and just like adapting, making friends, like, you know, just kind of the culture. Tell me what that like transition was like for you.
Yeah, it was a culture, you know, shift for sure. I think there was some things that were kind of similar and familiar. I mean, in Riyadh, where there were different compounds, for example, that people would like neighborhoods basically, right? That different people lived in. Some of them were military based, like US military based, some of them were not, right? But you know, when you're in school, you just, you know, make friends and people live in different compounds or different places, whatever, and you just kind of go hanging out at friends' houses. And then yeah, it seemed like my childhood seemed like, I think, pretty normal from the sense of, you know, going out and hanging out with different kids that I was in school with at their neighborhoods. And for the most part, you know, the only difference was that they were all kind of, you know, enclosed in comparison to like some neighborhoods in you know, America that are not, right? That are just kind of like there, you drive in, you leave. So they were just, you know, walls bought around them. But they were huge, these massive neighborhoods. So that was nice. I didn't really like kind of take too much getting used to, because it was very comparable to like, you know, like a, living in an American neighborhood and going anywhere, right? We went to, my sister and I were both there. So we went to SAIR, which was an acronym for the Saudi Arabian International School of Riyadh.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so we were both.
It was an English influenced boarding school then, I assume.
Yeah, it was like, it was a school. We didn't, wasn't bored there, but we were there, yeah, every day. We just get kind of drive to and from. And it was very much an international America school, you know, American kids, British kids, all kinds. Yeah. So it was cool because it was very multicultural, very international. I got everything, like exposed every type of, you know, race, kid and all that. So it was beautiful. You know, everyone was there hanging out. Yeah, yeah, totally. Which, you know, I still credit about, you know, how much I loved it there.
Right.
I still have very fond memories of being there, you know. And it was funny. I tell people, like, getting picked on just a little bit here and there as the American kid, which I found funny.
That's
just looking back at it now, it's like, you know, people will always find something.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And kids can be brutal no matter, like,
whatever. Yeah. It's like, what can we make fun of? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, that's a part of human nature, which sucks. Yeah. It's such a weird thing. But yeah. Tell me, like, what the music, like, affinity was for so many cultures from, you know, because, like, there are really, like, three music markets. There's the U.S. market, there's the English market, and I kind of feel like the Australian market's like those are the three big ones. And then everything else has all these sub-markets that, like, comprise of maybe it's an Indonesian radio network or an Indian network or, you know, film and TV. Tell me what the music that you guys were all kind of attracted to, you know, just what were you sharing music-wise with other friends? What was the hip stuff that you were, like, fascinated with?
Honestly, once we started like working, we were just so focused on working. We listened to whatever they were like telling us the realm of listening to or performing. Like I wasn't like this music head in the sense of like a fan yet. I was more so like just absorbing this opportunity that we had and just taking it one day at a time, you know. And then getting kind of obsessed with whatever we were kind of told to listen to based on what we were going to sing. So, you know, the Lion King soundtrack was one, you know.
That's a good one, though.
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there was a, you know, that's kind of how it kind of ended up going music-wise, inspiration-wise. It was more about just getting assigned something and then just obsessing with that, which was good because I wasn't biased to anything, you know, and just kind of, you know, get a good experience and with everything and try it out and just
did you start a band or anything like that once you got to high school? And were you
once we were in high school, once we came back to the States and all that, and I wanted to kind of get more. I was in the chamber choir at the time in high school, and I wanted to kind of get more involved with writing stuff and I doing something as a result of the writing. And so one of my couple best friends and I, we all kind of put together, started a little a cappella group in high school that we ended up performing, you know, throughout our high school. We performed at GW a lot, which was George Washington University in D.C.
Yeah, I saw you did the Kennedy Honors, too.
Yeah, yeah, we did the Kennedy Center Honors, yeah, exactly, yeah.
So cool. Yeah. What did you sing for Quincy? What was the song that you sang?
It was a bunch of different Quincy songs. So, like, it was, like, kind of like a kind of
a medley.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. It was a medley of Quincy Jones songs for the most part.
So wild.
Man. Oh yeah. Yeah.
And you're just like, yeah, we're in DC. We're rocking it. And this came back to DC, right? Isn't that where you went to high school?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we share a lot of parallels. Cause like I also had an acapella group in college.
Oh, really? Oh, no way.
Okay. And we continue to do, now we only meet to do like the national anthem at like sporting events.
No, cool.
It's like getting great tickets to a sporting event with your boys, and then you just like end up singing, and then you're just hanging with them in these great seats. You know what I mean? So that's what we primarily do it for now. But, you know, there's such a blend and an ear that you have to have once you go through that rite of passage of doing that. Was it mixed, guys and girls? Was it just guys? Tell me what the acapella
group was. Just guys. I went to an all guys high school, so it was just guys. I grew up on Boyz II Men.
Yeah.
I think it was like my first obsession musically. So, you know, being able to kind of have an affinity for harmony early on. I've always been a harmony guy. Boyz II Men,
like the first record, Coolie High Harmony, or was it like the blue record? Because
like Motown Philly. Yeah, from there on, yes.
Yeah, dude, I love that record. That's hell yeah. Record. Still hell one yeah. of my favorite records.
Totally. Yeah. So I kind of got obsessed with them and then took that. And that was like the foundation musically. That's why, like, I'm always, even no matter what genre it is that I'm doing, I'm still like harmony centric. Right. And I got to check myself a little bit sometimes. I'm like, well, this is not, you know, we don't need a 4-part, 5-part harmony here, man. Chill.
I love it. No,
but I love harmonies.
Yeah. I love harmony, and you can put 4 or 5-part harmony over everything. I'm into it because that's like, totally. You know what, when you know, you and I started writing a song, and you sent me a demo with a bunch of harmonies, I was like, oh, this guy knows how to do harmonies. Now I know why, because it's an acapella group. You know what I mean? You have to know parts. You have to hear how it fits, how they're stacked, and how it works. And it's also like the blend, too. It's like, you know, when you sing in a group, it's like you can hear how harmonies blend together and how they work and how they don't work. You know what I mean? So that's really cool. What kind of stuff did you do with the acapella group? You said, did you do covers? Did you do originals?
Yeah, we did originals and covers. Wow. We did a couple songs that I had written, which was, you know, which is cool. Some of the first songs I ever, you know, wrote. Wow. We did covers. We did In the Still of the Night. We did Love You Like I Do.
Yeah.
I don't remember. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Don't know why I love you like I do. Da, yep. da, da, yep. da, da, da. All right, yeah, that. And we did,
I had to do It's So Hard to Say Goodbye because every acapella group that then. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, we did Can You Stay in the Rain.
Oh, cool. Instead,
which was, you know, Boyz II Men's rendition of Can You Stay in the Rain is my favorite.
I also love their version of In the Still of the Night.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's one of the best.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to the edition with Can You Stay in the Rain, but I mean, that Boyz II Men version is...
You know what's crazy is I was at NAMM maybe 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. And I'm up in the guitars. I think I was in the Fender booth. And I was walking around, and Sean Stockman from Boyz II Men.
Heck yeah.
And I was like, dude, man, you influenced my high school.
Dope voice. I love him.
My favorites. And we exchanged emails, and he was telling me, like, I was asking him, I actually asked him, you'll love this. I said, yo, man, what happened to the bass? I have to ask you, like, the bass left.
You asked him that? I know what happened because I was like obsessed with what the hell, because Michael was like the man.
And he told me he was just like having some problems, like with tour life and like his wife, and also just like alcohol and just kind of like not making the best decisions. So he was like, yo, I gotta, you know, I'm a religious man and kind of finding that part of it. And so that's what he said. He said he loved it. He said, what's funny is Nathan would usually do all the bass parts on even the early stuff that, you know, he was doing. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah. So we just have Nathan do the recording, and then we sing it all together live with Nathan doing the bass. So Nathan's actually doing both.
Really?
Isn't that crazy?
I did not know that.
Yeah. So it was wild because I was like, dude, first of all, the guy left at the peak of their success. And it was just like, you know, it was kind of like the Siddhartha thing. Like, he goes through and gets everything that he could ever want. And then just, he was destroying the things in his life that were actually pillars for him to like build a life around. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like why he left. That's what he told me. He was like, yeah, it was just like the right decision, and we were bummed. And, you know, they're still like some of the best singers in the business. Like, there's, I don't know if you're
still crushing it. Yeah.
So that's awesome, dude. That's awesome. And then, so you finished high school, and then you started going through a little bit of a health ailment. Is this when it happened?
Yeah, near the tail end of high school. My first semester of senior year, I got So my high school was a Jesuit high school. They had this religious retreat that they did every year for the seniors called Kairos or Kairos, whatever you want to pronounce it. And it was supposed to be a type of like kind of transition day from boy being a boy and or child to like a man, right? Like adulthood. That was part of one of those things. And just what comes with that and getting to, you know, terms with that. And they still don't know what exactly, if it was a spider bite or what exactly, but I got, somehow I got sick with something. And we were in this like farmhouse in La Plata, Maryland somewhere. And I remember I was really like my back of my legs were really sore and I had like a really bad headache, like a worse headache. It felt different. It was way more painful than any normal headache. Wow. And I remember just being like, what, you know, but like brushing it off. And then like the next day, my balance was a little off, but I was still in kind of denial about it. I wasn't really thinking anything, whatever, I'll sleep it off. Maybe I'm tired. And then after like 2 days, I woke up and it was like 2-3 in the morning, whatever. I was like sweating like I've never been sweating in my life.
Wow.
And I went to go stand up and I like fell over and I could barely walk. And I was like, something's clearly wrong with me. And I was, you know, using the wall to hold me up. And I walked down the hallway to where the one of the chaperones or whatever you want to call it was. And I told him, I was like, something's wrong with me, you know. And he took my temperature and it was like 104, 105.
Wow.
And yeah. So they were like going to take me to the hospital that was local there. And the last thing I remember was I was sitting in this chair and this chaperone guy was Brother Jerry was his name, was sitting in front of me. And I like turned to my right and I saw this van pull up. And then I don't remember anything after that. My memory comes back a few months later. But from what I was told happened after that was that they took me to this hospital. They did a few tests, found out I had something, but they weren't sure what it was. I was getting worse. Georgetown could take care of it, but like, but they didn't know what the heck was wrong with me. My mom ended up driving down from DC and the power of like people sometimes and going above and beyond and stuff. There was an ambulance like crew that just got off. And they just got back to the hospital and they were just ready to leave. And they needed to there was a big snowstorm there, or else they would have like helicopter medevaced me, but they couldn't fly in the snow. And so my mom was about to just take me into the, you know, her Grand Cherokee, whatever that she had, to drive me to Georgetown. But this crew that just got off work was like, you know, they noticed the need and they decided to step up and take me to Georgetown. They put chains on the ambulance and they just drove in this freaking blizzard and they took me to Georgetown. And then as soon as I got to Georgetown, I had a seizure and then they ended up like inducing me with this everyone kind of is more familiar with, which is like propofol to help kind of put into a coma a little bit, because I was slipping into one and I kept having seizures. And then I was in a coma for about a month, and then they went to, while the virus was out, while doing its toll, and they did a couple spinal taps to me to find out that I had an infection in my fluid, in my spinal cord, and in my brain, which was called acute viral myeloencephalitis and meningitis. Both were viral.
Wow.
And And
I had a friend that had spinal meningitis and she lost her fingers and toes. Because it can mess with the circulation of your.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, when I was there, when I got to Georgetown, there were two other kids that were also, you know, high school senior 18 that were around my age, and both of them died that night. And I miraculously did not. They stopped the propofol after the virus was done, thinking I would wake up. I remember they told my mom I would wake up in like 15 to 45 minutes or something. And I didn't wake up. I didn't wake up for like another month. And then they, the day or like the day before they were going to move me into like this basement where the long-term coma patients are, I opened my eyes apparently. And so I woke up, I was paralyzed from my neck down. Wow. I couldn't talk. I don't know if you can see, I had this like my
trachea.
Trachea, yeah, tracheotomy. Yeah, there's a couple surgeries to fix it later, but yeah, the
wow.
Yeah, that's, I had this, so I had to learn how to do everything again. I was told I wouldn't walk. I was told I'd have to, you know, I don't want to get too graphic, but catheterize myself because I couldn't take a piss anymore.
Right.
And, you know, and I was just, you know, trying to get to grips with, like, I was only awake for 15 minutes a day. That was so heavily medicated. Whenever I was awake, it was, but it took a long time to kind of get, you know, to terms with stuff. And I was, you know, I gained use of my fingers again. It wasn't as good as this motor function, but right. I could move my hands. And I mean, I
that's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I know I'm kind of like talking, but yeah. So that's what happened.
So how long was the whole period of you from the time it started to the, like, getting therapy and kind of figuring out what was the whole trajectory of it?
So it was like 2 months in the coma and then like 7 weeks after that. And then I was checked out of George. Well, I might've gone to National Rehab Hospital after like a month, maybe a week, a couple of weeks after I got out of the coma. And then I went to National Rehab Hospital and in DC, and I was an inpatient there for like 2 months. So probably 4 months altogether.
And that's your senior year of high school where you should be enjoying.
Well, I'll tell you, dude, as soon as I could use my hands again, like I was getting classwork done. Like people, like teachers came to help and taught me stuff. And I didn't want to like lose my, you know, the time that I had with high school. So as soon as I was able, like my brain was a better, you know, it took a while, don't get me wrong. But once I was able to kind of accommodate that.
You're like, I'm out of the coma. Give me my homework.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was like doing that. It was, you know, you'd think other things, but you'd be surprised how, you know, stuff like that kind of, you know, giving you something to focus on.
Right.
And that, yeah, helped. I mean, it helped. Yeah. And I had firmly believed that I was not going to walk again. I came to the understanding and kind of had accepted the fact that I was probably going to be, you know, in a wheelchair for the rest of my life as a result. But then I started doing hydrotherapy in the pool and, you know, by the grace of God, I was able to kind of get my legs back. And then
do you remember the sensation of not being able to feel like any of your extremities to get
it? Sure. Yeah, I don't forget it. I still remember it.
Wow.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And now you're playing guitar, playing piano, singing.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, like life, you know, I don't take anything for granted, brother. I'll tell you, like, and I just, you know, little things, little issues and little problems here and little annoyances. I used to beg for those when I was like unable to feel anything from my neck down, couldn't even take a piss on my own, you know, like little things you don't even think about that are so precious, you know? So I don't take anything for granted now. I am like, gratitude, like, you know, I'm walking, talking, just wow. Gratitude in human form at this point.
You know, it's really easy to get kind of like wrapped up in your own shit and just like focusing on the things that aren't happening, and then you have a story like this that you hear and it's like, oh my God, snaps you out of the funk. You know, it's like, it's crazy. I mean, that is something I think we can all learn from, just the fact that you're through that, and you know, and you've now recovered. So now you are pursuing music and you're got this music career. When did guitar come into your life? When did kind of music take full force?
Yeah, I mean, I was playing with a band in DC. We were all playing together and doing a lot of shows throughout. And I remember that this one guy I was playing guitar with, he ended up not like canceling last second on a show. And then I was like, I don't want to deal with that again. So I'm going to pick up guitar. So if I need to, I'll play myself or whatever. So I literally started doing lessons after that.
What was his reasoning? Just curious.
Couldn't get a lift. I mean, I drove him around a lot too at the time. I was like, you know, I'm sure you know how it is, right? But like, if you want something to get done, I just do it. And I don't like wait for whatever. And I just want to get it done and let's just go. Yeah. So I was like the taxi driver. I was the show booker. I was the manager. I was everything. You know what I mean? Like, I just did it so we can do it. And I'm not going to make excuses and just focus on what I can control and just do it. Right. So like, yeah. So I was the taxi driver shuttling everybody around too, you know? Yeah, I mean, he just canceled on me, couldn't get a ride. I couldn't go down there. And, you know, yeah. So then that was how it started.
I feel your pain because I do all those jobs now with two of my bands. And it's like, oh, my God, it can be a lot sometimes. But
totally.
It's also gratifying when things go right. It's like, you know what? You put that together. You made it happen. So then you started playing guitar. How old were you when you started playing?
Oh, I mean, this was... God, early 20s, I guess.
Okay. So yeah. you're out of high school. Did you go to anywhere to pursue college or anything?
Yeah, I went to Fordham in New York for college.
I read that.
So that I kind of got, that's how I tried to like to finagle my way through different flavors of working in the music industry while I was in New York. Yeah.
So doing industry stuff or what? What did you do?
Yeah, everything. I mean, I worked at MT, at Sony BMG in the Urban College Marketing Department. I was a VJ for MTVU.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I just work on a couple shows. So they used to have this show called the Dean's List, and it was basically like somebody would walk around their college campus giving doing a countdown. And when I saw that, I approached the radio station that was there at college, and I was like, hey, I want to do this. Is there somebody that has a cameraman or something that can kind of help me out or whatever? I'll pay him money or whatever the case. And so me and this guy, and he decided that, you know, he'd do it with me. And we walked around and doing this, and I like sent it to them afterward. And I was like, hey, I really want to do this show. Here you go. And I think because I already just had everything done, they were like, okay. And like they responded and they aired it. And
that's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, they had a list online of like the approved songs that they could do. So like half of these bands I did not necessarily listen to, care, you know, whatever. I wanted to like just get my opportunity to try that and see if that was something I would want to do.
Do you remember any of the bands? Do you remember any of the bands?
I remember a couple. Well, so I remember the number one, of course, that I actually liked, which was Fake Tales of San Francisco, which I love that song. But I remember the Muse was another band. Zookeeper's Boy was one of the songs.
Wow.
The Game had a song. I don't remember what.
This is like mid-2000s then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
great. And and I was like trying to think of who else. I don't remember who else. But yeah, so that's kind of how that happened. And then, so that went well. It was good feedback. And then they invited me to do another show, which was like a kind of a panelist with three kids called The Freshmen, which is like the freshmen of music, right? So like new videos would come up, new artists, you know, and then we would either comment on them or, you know, like to kind of give our two cents and opinion on it. And the first show I did was the Freshman Five, which was like the Super Bowl of that show.
Wow.
So I got introduced to like the Cold War Kids and Amy Winehouse. And they were both on there. And I was like, these acts are fire. Like, yeah.
That's crazy. Like,
love them. Yeah. And then so I did that for a bit and I liked it.
Did you get to meet them? Did you get to like do
anything? It was just their videos, their new videos. Right. We were just by ourselves in the studio there. Yeah, so we didn't get to meet them. At Sony, I met Weird Al Yankovic and and Clips when Malice was still rapping before he left.
I just went out to dinner with my family and Weird Al Yankovic walked right by us.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, it was so funny, but I was like,
he's awesome. Yeah,
he's a badass. Like,
he's a good guy. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, very personable. Yeah, him and Clips were too. Like, I love Malice. He's an awesome dude. Like, I would dap him up if I saw him, like, you know, now, like, he's great. Yeah, very, what is the word I'm looking for? He's, like, he's very extroverted, you know. Right. He loves meeting people, shaking hands, and, you know, he's a very friendly guy. He was great, yeah. Pusha T's cool too. You know, he was super personable. Everyone was kind of cool.
And then when did you start like wanting to do your own thing, writing your own songs, kind of taking that route?
Yeah. Once I was in college, I performed at this really shady club in the Bronx that, And, I got really good feedback on it, and they it was the way the show worked out. I kind of got screwed over, but then I ended up being really good. And then they were like, let's make it up to you. I apologize. Okay. We didn't like take you seriously, whatever. Okay. So they were like, we're going to book you on this radio show. So I got to do this radio interview, and I played like the song that I had then. And that ended up kind of helping me get a couple other gigs that I was just performing with. I performed at like SOBs in New York, which was like a great venue, you know. So I just kind of started performing and going around that way.
Well, let's play a video first. Let's get to some music. What do you want us to play first?
Yeah, let's start with Exposure.
All right. Here's Sidney Reilly, and this is Exposure.
On someone more obvious, I'm always questioning and complicating us. You still picture us together in some form of life, like a photograph we took in black and white. I know there is more than meets the eye with you. You're more than just your high heels and your running shoes. I love the way you're wrong for me in every way, and you love the way I'm wrong for you. Guess that's why they say that opposites attract. We're like some photographs, never really focused, a flash in every moment, ignoring the exposure. You see us when the stars align, a crystal image cropped of us under the sky. I wonder if I match the image you see in your mind, the negative of what you see when you close your eyes. But oh, I wonder where you go. I wonder if I join you when I'm gone and out of scope. And oh, I wonder if you know that I could let the light into the darkest place you go. 'Cause I love the way you're wrong for me in every way, and you love the way I'm wrong for you. 'Cause that's why they say that opposites attract. We're like some photographs, never really focused, a flash in every moment, ignoring the exposure. I love the way you're wrong for me in every way, and you love the way I'm wrong for you. Guess that's why they say that opposites attract. We're like some photographs, never really focused, a flash in every moment. 'Cause I love the way you're wrong for me in every way, and you love the way I'm wrong for you. Guess that's why they like some photographs, never really focused, flashing every moment, ignoring the exposure, ignoring the exposure.
I was slamming, dude.
Yeah, thank you, brother.
Super poppy, very good vocals. Tell me about the inspiration behind the song.
Sure, yeah. So the inspiration initially kind of started on the kind of exploring a bit more about the multitude of ways people can connect. And sometimes it's, you know, the fairy tale BS, and sometimes it's like the things you least expect to connect with somebody on, or, you know, and seeing the beauty and or seeing the positive in like all the kind of different ways that we can connect and how we're similar and, or, you know what I mean? So just kind of exploring that concept a little further. And then, you know, with the initial idea kind of came this idea about adding a lot of camera terminology with it,
right,
from that double entendre exposure perspective, you know, and then kind of combining the two. And then that's how that kind of came together.
And was your wife the inspiration behind the writing, or was it just like dating before, kind of like just figuring out what works? Like, what was the inspiration? Who's the muse?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we were dating at the time, but it was kind of like one of those things where it's like, was very effortless in how we kind of just kind of were, you know? And then, yeah, being able to kind of use that as like, not like the sole end result from the inspiration perspective, but like more like just the beginning of like reflecting on how that can happen and how other ways that it can happen, or just imagining how it might happen for other people. And then kind of, you know, exploring that a bit.
That's awesome. You know, I love a good love song. They're just like, why we're kind of here, always listening to music, you know what I mean? And it's like, you kind of had a cool, interesting perspective of like getting to know whoever that partner is and kind of figuring out like what's going to work, what doesn't work. I love the production that you did on the bridge, like with the, you kind of had like a filter on your vocal and you're kind of like talking very kind of vulnerable, you know, about like said person. Mm-hmm. And it's just like one of the coolest parts of the song. And then the hook is just great. The beat is really solid, really good pop, like pop sensibility. I love the vocoder, like the harmony.
Oh, thank you, brother. Yeah, love the vocoder.
Yeah, it's like it's such a cool element. Did you kind of like want it to kind of take those directions? Did it kind of start?
Yeah, yeah. There's, let me see if I can find this. Hold on a second.
Yeah, please. I love
there
that.
Was this, let's see if I can find this.
Was it like a song or a sound?
Yeah, it was a song, yeah, by an artist, and I'm hoping I can find it. Let me see. I might not be able to. We'll see. Hold on.
It's okay. No problem. Do you remember who it was?
That's why I'm saying I want to remember, but I don't want to like say the wrong thing either. Let me see. God. I don't remember it, but let me see if I can find it. I'm not going to take too much time looking for it.
Yeah, that's all right. You know what? You can look for it while we play the next song. Let's play something else. I want to get to your song. So
sure. Yeah, yeah.
What do you want to play us next?
So on the flip side, well, I think Villain will be next. Villain was very much like, I love Michael Jackson too. Villain was Michael Jackson inspired, but also from, you know, just kind of exploring the idea that of perspective. And how even when you're doing the right thing, sometimes it can feel like you're doing something wrong.
Right.
Or even if you have one type of perspective, you know, if somebody's getting hurt as a result of it, it's still bad, right? So, like, sometimes things aren't always black and blue or, you know, as clearly, you know, lying in the sand as the, right, as you wish they would be or as they actually are. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, yeah, here's, so that's kind of that concept, yeah.
Here's Sidney Reilly with Villain.
The moment that I walked away from the ocean, I realized I belong in the sea. 'Cause now that my eyes and my heart are seeing different, I can't see the line that was drawn at my feet. And I can't see wrong or right. And I can't see black. Why I'm feeling like the villain, feeling like the villain. Why I'm feeling like the villain, Why I'm feeling like the villain.
Cool. I actually hear a ton of Maroon 5 influence on a tune like that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, love them too. Absolutely.
Yeah, man, just like really cool production. You got a cool lyric video. Tell me a little bit about, like, that was such a trendy thing to do, and it still is. Tell me, like, why you chose the ocean to be kind of that image of the video.
You know, like it goes, the tide comes in and out, you know, and I think there's there's a lot of, you know, comparisons with perspective with that, you know.
It's cool.
Yeah. And some people are happy the tide's leaving, you know. Some people are sad. It's the same type of thing. It's like there's two sides to it, you know.
I love that you're, like, heavily influenced by Michael Jackson because, like, I still think he's the greatest of all time. Like, he's just the baddest of the bad. I don't know if you ever noticed when you came over, right over here, let me see if I can point to it correctly. Right over here, there's a big picture of Michael Jackson, because he's just the shit. He's the baddest of the bad. So tell me, like, how Michael Jackson's music kind of influenced you, and kind of how that seeped into the writing.
Well, there was that kind of pop focus, but there was one thing that, like, Michael was the first, Ray Charles was the second for me, Stevie was third, of the fact that of putting in Prince as well. Putting actual, like, style into music, and the difference between being a singer versus being an artist, you know, and injecting style into it. And so Michael was, like, the first one for me that was like, oh, this is, you know, style with singing, not leading with singing, but leading with the style, leading with the artist first. You know what I mean?
You know, what's crazy? What's crazy is a friend of mine who's been a guest on the show, she's a singer. Her name's Maya Sykes, killing singer. Like, she was on my last record. She's just a badass. And her uncle designed all of Michael Jackson's outfits.
Oh, no way.
So he did Rock With You video. He did red jacket at the Grammys. He did all of his. He actually did his outfits and Earth, Wind, and Fire. So you can see that there was a resemblance. Because it was all the sparkly stuff, all the funky, like, 80s stuff. That was all him. And he said that she said that the glove that Michael Jackson wore was like, it weighed like something like 10 pounds or something ridiculous.
What? Really?
Because of all the crystals in it. And even all the jackets, all that stuff, it was heavy because it had like real crystals on it. So it just, like, all of the clothing looked so spectacular, but it also was heavy because of the quality of the stones and everything that were on it. It's just super wild, dude. So,
wow, that's crazy. I didn't know it was that. You don't even think about.
And you know what? Like, nobody thinks about that, but no. She was telling me all these details about how all this, like, this was like a big part of her life. Like, she was so close to her uncle, and her uncle was like this fashion designer for Michael Jackson and Earth, Wind & Fire. And when her uncle died, Michael Jackson called her on the telephone.
Oh, really?
And she totally thought it was a prank call. She's like, okay, yeah, whatever. And she hung up on Michael Jackson twice. And on the third time, she said, Maya, it's really me. It's really Michael Jackson. And he said, I knew your uncle. He was a huge part of my life. And, you know, I owed a lot to him because he just created so much of the style and the look of all of my music. Isn't that crazy? It's so
crazy.
Wild.
Crazy.
You know, I knew you would appreciate that just being a Michael Jackson fan.
Yeah. Plus, it's nice to hear that, you know, it takes a village, you know. I like reminding people, like, nobody does anything on their own, you know.
So true.
Yeah.
Even you see all the Taylor Swifts and the Maroon 5s, they've got stylists, they've got a whole team of people that are totally just like perpetuating, totally, you know, the success of the whole vibe. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Let's play something else. What are we playing next?
So next is It's Always Been You. This is the song I wrote and surprised my now wife with on our wedding day. And the video is from clips from our actual wedding.
That's amazing. Here's Sydney Riley. What's the name of the song one more time?
It's Always Been You.
Here's Sydney Riley with It's Always Been You. Nope. It came and went. Hold on.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Such a beautiful video and song, dude.
Oh, thank you, brother. Yeah,
tell me somebody. It's very, it almost sounds like Unchained Melody. It's got that vibe, dude.
So totally. Tell me. That was the vibe I was going for.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. It totally has that vibe. Like, you
We used to drive around, like, when we were dating, we used to drive around, like, you know, just blasting that song. And then she loved it so much. And then I did a lot of research into that song. And I was basically, I wanted her to have her own kind of version of that in some way. So I kind of used that and like Elvis's, you know, I Can't Help Falling in Love with You and these like classic stuff and just wanted to try to make something really classic that was like, you know, for her, inspired by kind of thing. But also at the same time, I knew I wanted to be able to kind of, do something, release it as well, you know, and all this. So I kind of wanted to make it still something that was, the messaging was, you know, particular and at the same time, universal.
And it's also life imitates art. I mean, you've got your life story. You really did get married. You really, it's not like just like a fake video. You actually clips from the wedding. You know what I mean? And it was filmed where? It was filmed in D.C.?
That was in Newport, actually.
Oh, wow.
Rhode Island. Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Rhode Island originally, so that's where we got married there. Yeah.
Wow, that's wild. And that's like off Virginia, right?
No, that's in Rhode Island.
Oh, Rhode Island. Okay. Yeah. That's crazy.
It's neither a road or an island.
That's crazy. Well, I don't think I've ever been. Have I been to Rhode Island? I don't think I've ever been to Rhode Island. So,
well, there's Providence is the capital, and Newport is like, Newport's probably the, I'd say whatever. It's like probably the most famous part of Rhode Island. Just like the Kennedys were there. You know, there's like a lot of history with Newport.
That's not where the Newport Folk Festival came from, right?
There's a jazz festival that's there.
Yeah, I think that's the same. I think it's the same one. Yeah.
It might be, to be honest. Yeah. There's a lot of history there, too. Yeah. A lot of like the homes you see are historical from the 1800s, and it's beautiful. Yeah.
Well, it's such a picturesque video, and you just like paint the story so well with the song and the video and the images. And I'm sure you loved it. Tell her I said hello because I met you both at the Hotel Cafe together.
Yeah, totally. I will.
You and I become quick music friends. So it's just so awesome. Thank you.
Yeah,
people find you if they want to find your music online and find you to kind of, you know, follow you and check out your stuff on Spotify or whatever?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. At I am Sydney Riley, everything, Twitter, Instagram, at I am SIDNEYRIELEY. If you want to hit me up online, my website is IamSydneyRiley.com. Other than that, that's me at I am Sydney Riley. Just type it in every social media and you'll find me.
And you got new music coming? You got new music videos? Are you working
on it? Yeah, working on new music. Absolutely. Yeah, I've been working on a lot of more on the kind of the licensing side of things these days. A lot of the writing I've been doing, kind of working on that, which is good. So, yeah, so we're working on that. But I have an acapella album actually that I put together.
That's awesome.
Going to be in the process of working on. I'm trying to see about wanting to get maybe some things produced that kind of have them kind of go in conjunction with each other. So I'm working on that still. But yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. We look forward to many new things from you.
No, I appreciate you, brother.
You're a talented singer and songwriter. We've got a song that we're going to finish too.
Yes, absolutely. Can't wait. Yeah, yeah. But, can't wait to knock that out.
Check out Sydney Riley. I am SydneyRiley.com. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Sydney Riley, we'll see you guys next week. Peace, love, take care of yourselves, take care of each other.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.